for the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Welcome back to Rated G Radio, and tonight it's going to be Super Gay Radio with our, I'm going to just call him my co-host, Mr. Rob Watson. Rob's going to be coming onto the show in just a second and talking about his latest article, which is going viral today. It's called The Gay Dad Sounds Off on the Pun for the Homophobia Industry Refusing to Do Her Job. And then I also want to ask him about the Duggars and the latest about the Ashley Madison scandal and oh, so much more. But in the meantime, Rob, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Do I have to be super gay tonight? Is that what I heard?
Well, that's what I call our episodes now. I call them, when I have you on the show, it's Super Gay Radio, and then when I have Trucker Patty,
okay,
it's Transgender Tuesdays.
Yeah,
Transgender
well,
Trucker Patty
super
Tuesday.
Gay.
Yeah, so there
yeah,
we go.
I can
so
be
Super Gay Radio.
Gay, yeah. Not
well,
a problem.
It's, well, the reason I call it Super Gay Radio is, number one, saying Super Gay Radio is just something fun to say. But when we have Rob on, or if I have another LGBT, I say activist or representative of the community, I always like to call it Super Gay Radio because we just primarily focus on LGBT issues. And the remainder of the shows each week or each month typically are just, you know, regular lifestyle and entertainment types of things that you would see on, you know, Regis and Kathy Lee or, you know, Kathy Lee and Michael or Entertainment Tonight or whatever the case may be. And so when I have a superstar like you joining the show, Rob, it's always fun to talk about things that are affecting the LGBT community because you are an expert at this. I say that because you're the co-host of KSCO 1080 AM's Out in Santa Cruz on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock that you can listen to online like I did this past week. Or, you know, if you're in the Santa Cruz area, you just, you know, turn your car radio on and magically you're there. So, but that's why I call it Super
right.
Gay Radio when you're here.
I own it. I will be it. I personify it. No problem.
Right on. So what's going on in your super gay world today?
Well, it's in the super gay world, a lot of things. I'd say the thing that's going on today is this sort of reverse lottery situation with Josh Duggar. I mean, apart from how anybody may feel about him and, you know, of all the things that he's done and said and stood for, you have to appreciate that the man has won the lottery ticket from hell in just his situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, to be, you know, to have this hacking thing happen with this adultery website and out of 38 million people be the person that they search for the most and find and then publicize and become the poster boy for is just, I mean, how lucky is that? Or unlucky?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's, you know, and I will tell you, years ago, you know, I should have known when, you know, what's the saying, if thou doth protest too much, you know, you're quacking like a duck, and you're walking like a duck, so you must be a duck. I was quacking and walking and didn't really have any idea, but I sure said a lot of nasty and terrible things in years past. And when I, you know, kind of realized who I am, I was like, holy cow, was I an ass, and how horrible was I along the way? But to see, you know, this come up, I don't want to say I'm surprised, but I am surprised at the, well, I'm not really surprised. And I think I'm really not surprised because I just got finished watching an episode of the Steve Haskell show or whatever that talk show is where they have people that are, you know, crazy. And it's like Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer co-produces it. And I'm fresh off of that. That's my 1 hour of TV today because that was on and I couldn't get the People's Court to stop flickering on Channel 9 because we don't have TV. We've got an HD antenna that's outside, so whatever comes in, comes in. So, you know, you see this Josh Duggar type of thing come up, and this guy has, you know, obviously done some things in his past. And, of course, you know, his family has chosen to take a certain path on to work with that, right or wrong. You know, and you know, who are we to cast stones and throw rocks and things like that? Because those of us who live in glass houses, you know, probably shouldn't be casting the first stone. But then, you know, you have the fact that he has been – such an outspoken antagonist for the LGBT community for years by being part of the as a parent research council, and
it's the FRC, right?
FRC,
right. Family research.
Family. There we go. Sorry. And then to have him work with different political campaigns and out there, I'm on a pedestal. I'm not going to cast. I don't walk in his shoes, so I'm not going to sit here and say, well, he shoulda, coulda, woulda, whatever. All I know is that I feel very sorry, not only for him, but specifically for his wife and his family, that they're having to go through this at this point. It is just unimaginable. And I've done stupid stuff in my past, let me tell you, and I've felt embarrassed and humiliated and stupid for doing stupid things in the past, but I have no level of how he must feel at this time. And I'm not trying to get anybody to feel sorry for him. That's absolutely not what I'm trying to do. I just am like, I don't know how, the man sleeps at night. This is shocking.
One of the things though with him is, and two, I'm not really driving for sympathy for him, but the first scandal, which had to do with molestation, there's no sympathy for him. He was young, but he caused harm, and the family reaction was actually pretty weird around it. And that was what it was. But the second one, I look at a lot of it, and I feel badly on one level in terms of how nitpicked over these profiles are getting, and they're down to his specific sexual interests and all of that stuff, and quite frankly, they're pretty normal for just an active sexual guy. And the thing that really strikes me is more going back to the Duggars themselves and this repressed life that they have projected and promoted. And it's part of what you were mentioning before, where the part of that promotion of their life is to go out and beat up other people and tell, LGBT families that they're not good enough, they're not worthy of, marital rights, they're not worthy of this, telling transgender men or transgender women that they are, potential child molesters, and all of these things that they have beaten up people over, when their repressive stance, I think, seems like almost a natural reaction to that. When you've been oppressed and driven down in your family life, you're pledging that you're only going to have, sex with one woman your entire life, and, this whole mantra that they have put out there, and then find out, the guy's, he's a guy, and he has sexuality, and that the party line really didn't fit him. I feel very badly for his wife. That the betrayal is not
huge,
a good thing, and not excusable. But it's this whole repression that they're about. And I think if you look at the Catholic Church and the molestation scandals there, it's like the thing that is coming out of these massive sexual scandals of the last 20 years have been repression doesn't work. Repression is not healthy. And I think that that's the thing that the takeaway that would be helpful for all of us to reflect on. And the point you made is incredibly valid, is people who tend to be homophobic tend to be repressing something in themselves. It seems to be part of the deal of coming out, and we're either easy targets because, one, they're feeling same-sex attraction and really want to deflect that, or they're just feeling sexual and they don't want to admit it, so they beat up on people that they don't relate to, that they can accuse us of being just these sexual, beings, that's all we're about, which, of course, is not what we're about any more than any other human.
Well, I think anybody who's put in these types of situation, well, and he put himself in that situation. So first and foremost, there's that. But anybody who, you know, finds himself in a situation like this, and you can go back to like the Jimmy Swagger picking up prostitutes or looking at Playboys, or, you know, and then Jim Baker, or, you know, or any of the other people that are very high profile, you know, it happens time and time and time and time and time and time again. And you're like, you know, I'd stop casting stones anytime. And, you know, there's so much more, and you know, I'm not trying to get up on a pedestal, even though I'm on one right now, and I'm, you know, using that right now. But I would stop getting up on pedestals and, you know, casting stones and telling everybody they're going to hell because they don't eat the same kind of cheese sandwich that you want to eat, because more than likely you're probably doing stuff that you shouldn't be doing, and going out and proselytizing about it, I think, is a giant mistake. So I think it ends up just drawing more attention to you. You know, granted, you know, people do bad things every day, but if you are doing something that's not necessarily so fantastic, and I'm not saying anybody should do anything that I say at all, don't live by my rules at all. But, you know, if you're doing something that's not necessarily so great, number one, stop it. But, you know, if you're doing something that's not so great, and, you know, you're not going out and telling everybody, don't do this, but, you know, secretly you're doing that, I really have a hard time finding any sympathy for you when, you know, when the curtain's exposed and when that glass house shatters. It just,
well,
you know,
you're raising a really good point, though. I mean, I would take it one step further. I mean, think about it this way. Josh Duggar, the scandal that is erupting right now, simply would not be there if he hadn't done what you're talking about.
Right.
It wouldn't be there because, I mean, the 38 million people that were on this site are in his shoes. I mean, it's an adultery site. It is not just a cruise site or a sexual site. It is for people who want to commit adultery. And so there are 37,999,999 other people that are out there who have done what Josh Duggar has done. But the reason Josh Duggar has shaken out of that huge pack of people is because of what you were talking about, in that he went out to point fingers at others and lift himself up and do all that. So the big scandal is really that part, not the sex part. I mean, everybody
right.
else had sex and you know, ducked under it. The one thing I will say about Josh Duggar, and that, I have to give the man props for, in each of these cases, when the jig was up, coming out and saying, yes, I did that. In both cases, he said, yes, you know, I did it. And that, in so many ways, is kind of refreshing in itself. Because in so many cases, we're going on and on about the subterfuge and, you know, spinning on how it wasn't really them or whatever and all that kind of thing. And he's standing up and going, yeah, that, you know, awful, I did it. There it is.
And there you go. And Tony's chiming in on Facebook, and he says, so many conservative politicians condemn homosexuality, and then how many have come out to find out that they had gay relationships? You know, I think it's a valid point. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be a gay relationship. It could be adultery. It could be anything that, you know, you're sitting here trying to get on a cross for and say, you know, you shouldn't do that, and I'm so much better than you because I don't do that. But, you know, behind closed doors, that's all you're doing.
Well, Tony's right, though. There is a huge psychology behind homophobia, and we haven't even started looking at that. But it's there are anti-gay politicians that are many or several of which who have been, you know, secretly gay themselves. And, you know, as you pointed out when you came out, and I'm going to project on you, you know, that there's probably some homophobia that you were using to cover. I did it too.
Sure.
You know, when I was in high school, I told anti-gay jokes. You know, I heard of gay bashings that I didn't stand up for. You know, I was loath to do it because I didn't want to get discovered. And I hadn't even totally discovered myself. So some of it was even subconscious. But even beyond that, there are other people who have come out to be virulently anti-gay that have family members who are gay. And, you know, Pete Knight in California that did the very first 64 initiative that was the anti-gay marriage before, you know, anybody was even thinking about it. You know, he had a gay son, and it was almost like he was on a vendetta to, you know, stick it to his son. And Michelle Bachmann has a lesbian sister, and Newt Gingrich has a lesbian half-sister. And it's like it goes on and on with these people that seem to be wanting to manage their own family lives by attacking a whole community of people. And it's very weird.
I know, isn't it, though?
It's probably unique because in any other prejudice situation, the people you're prejudiced against are usually completely other than yourself. Like people who are, you know, anti-black, you know, are white people, and, you know, they're not secretly black, and that's why they're anti-black or anti-Latino or all these other offshoots. But in the case of homosexuality, there's this gray area where people have fluid sexualities, people are afraid of their own sexuality and gets threatened with that aspect of it. So it's it is kind of a unique bias that other biases don't seem to tap into.
I don't know. I just think that this, you know, this whole thing is sad on so many levels, and, you know, we're not going to see the end of this for, you know, quite, well, we won't see this end of this until the next, you know, big scandal. You know, we had Jared with Subway earlier this week and last week. You know, we have the Duggars this week again. You know, and I think the thing that gets me about the, you know, and I don't know how much of this is true, Rob, so I'm just talking, you know. I'm just talking because it's you and I talking on Super Gay Radio here on Thursday night. But, you know, the reports that you see about the Duggar family, we have money trouble now that we're not on TV and everything. It's like, why did you have, like, 48 kids, you know?
The Duggars, you know, and this is because I'm a parent, but they're – you know, Josh, I'm looking at it through my fatherly glasses at Josh and going, you know, you are one screwed up young man. And I
not
really
that
want to, well, yeah theoretically, he acts it.
Well,
maybe not in years, but yeah. But it's like, I really want him to get therapy. I want him to come to terms with who he is. He wanted to make restitution the best he can to people he's harmed. But, I want him to get there and say, guess what? I cannot be this rigid, you know, guy that I have been raised to be. That isn't me. I'm not going to be that. I need to address my total holistic being and be more true to who I am and stop pretending. You know, there's almost like a, ironically, a straight person coming out, you know, in terms of a fully functional, passionate being in him that needs to emerge. One that isn't predatory and you know, scooping up on women that are, he's predatory. That, again, that part is the dark, ugly part of it that is fairly unforgivable. But my big issue as a parent is looking at the Duggar parents themselves. And their reaction to both of these scandals is, our hearts are broken, and pray for us. And I'm sorry, as a parent, if my kids do something that is really misguided and wrong, I am not going to walk around telling you how my heart's broken. Like, they are my badge out there, my accomplishment. You know, they are living out there, and, you know, it is a reflection on my failure, you know, or my, that they owed me something. You know, breaking a heart is like what happens when you have a crush on somebody and they tell you they're not interested. You know, then they break your heart because your expectations are so high, or, you know, and it, your self-worth is in the balance. to me, it's, you know, we're looking at our relationship with our son. We're looking at what, you know, what the factors are around this. It just, you know, none of that is happening. And to me, that's the biggest travesty.
Well, you know, yeah, I think that because they're just too self-absorbed in their own world to really focus on what the bigger picture is. And the bigger picture is that, you know, you've got a screwed up family and you think popping out more kids is really cute.
Yeah, it's this whole set of rules that are not realistic. I mean, it's
right.
The, you know, in theory, they're saying that sexuality for an intimate expression is wrong, that sexuality is to make babies, and that's the joy, and they have lived true to walking that talk, so to speak. But it, you know, and he's sitting there going, you know, I mean, you read his list, and he wants intimacy. He wants, you know, it's, you know, he wants massage, and he wants, you know, these different, you know, things that would get him close and intimate with a partner. And that desire is, should be okay. You know, it's more effective if it's with the appropriate person. But
how far,
you know,
off
him wanting it
now going to be, is that even, do you think that'll ever be a realistic expectation that he should ever expect to find now that these things are coming out to light?
I hope he does, because to me, that's who he is. You know, he is a sexual being, and to go back to this repressed state is,
well, I'm not saying
that
he should go back and be repressed. I'm just saying, you know, given what, you know, the world now knows, you know, I mean, as his wife, I would have a hard time. I mean, I'm not in her shoes. Maybe she forgives and forgets. Maybe she knew. Maybe she, you know, who knows what's going on in that household? We don't live there. But, you know, if this is the first time finding out about it and I had an issue with it, it's probably going to be really hard for her to say, you know, come on, let's go have some fun in the bedroom now. And, you know, all's forgotten and I forgive you. I mean, that, you know, I don't see that happening tonight.
I would. I mean, it's their business, but I would kind of hope it doesn't happen, because you know, it's like it didn't. He didn't come to this because I don't know what their relationship is. I have to think the implication from what he's looking for outside implies that it's not what's happening within his own home. Whether that can happen, you know, that's their business.
Right, totally their business. But I just think that's going to,
yeah.
You know, if I were him and going, well, you know, I want to try to move past this, and I want to try to be, you know, a good guy and, you know, live with the way that everybody thinks I should live and blah, 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 blah. As his wife, I think that would be really hard to look past. You know, it's like, how can I ever trust you again? And how can I ever, you know, let you touch me again? How can I, you know, I don't know what, you know, is going through her head. I can only imagine.
I would hope she would reexamine the whole structure of what they decided and they were living up to as being true.
How
and
much therapy
find
do you think
herself a ton. Solid years worth of therapy. Seriously, it's like they like anybody who goes through things like this, it is never about the surface. It is always about what's going on that is deeper than that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, if he feels trapped and he's doing this and acting out, you know, she's definitely trapped, whether she feels it or not. And, you know, I would hope that she would find somebody that could be true to what she really wants. And I don't pretend to know what that is. You know, he's obviously got a list out of what he truly wants.
Right.
And, you know,
yeah.
He needs to, you know, I don't think we can turn to Josh Duggar and say, you know, you need to accept LGBT people because we're being true to ourselves, that you go pretend, live this pretend lifestyle and be this person that you're pretending to be. which is kind of what has caused, in my opinion, his problem from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, it's when kids or when people, when human beings are told you have to be this way and they're not, then they learn how to pretend and walk through it and play the game and then go live their authentic life separately. And that's kind of what he has been doing. And it's, I think he needs to separate from everybody, you know, go out there and figure out who he is. It's, you know, you and I know people who've done this with the ex-gay type of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Where they were in ex-gay situations and trying to live up to that, and you know, they've crumbled. They've crumbled out of that because they could not live up to everything that was expected of them. You know, many of them put on the spot. They had to tell people how recovered they were and how great their quote-unquote new life was until it all fell apart and they couldn't live it anymore. They couldn't be what they were pretending to be.
Well, we've had ex-gay therapist, you know, John Polk on the show before, and, you know, I remember the story. I didn't remember him, and I didn't put two and two together, but, you know, he lived that, you know, just like you're talking about. He would go to all these conferences and go make these speeches and tell everybody that they can change their lives, and he would go back to his hotel room and just cry and cry and cry and say, I can't keep doing this because I don't believe it, you know. And, it, you know, his story is quite fascinating to listen to, you know, and he's, you know, now at a point in his life where he's doing exactly what he wants to do. You know, family issues are still a little bit challenging for a couple members of his family. His ex-wife now, you know, obviously doesn't really care for him a whole lot for obvious reasons, but, you know, he's trying to move ahead and being, you know, living his authentic life. He has an award-winning, fantastic catering business that's booming in Portland, Oregon. He does this fantastic jewelry for on the side. He's, you know, got, you know, three great kids, but it's taken years for him to get to the point where, you know, he's, you know, kind of happy. And it's taken a lot of, you know, time and I'm sure therapy and money to get him to the point where, you know, he puts on a smile and he really feels it. And I don't know. I just feel for people who are going through that. I mean, it doesn't make anything that they've done better, but it's just, I can't imagine the amount of either shame or embarrassment or the, you know, I have to keep putting that mask on because this is what I'm supposed to do. Because that really
right.
is so hard to deal with.
Well, you know, and John is actually somebody that came to mind for me in terms of this conversation, because I remember when the Newsweek magazine came out mm-hmm. with John
yep.
and his wife on it
yep.
years ago. And it was, you know, there wasn't a lot of gay discussion going on around then. So it wasn't like if it had come out now where people would look at it and go, yeah, whatever. I mean, it was like, you know, desolate wasteland of discussion, and boom, this comes out saying, you know, guess what, it's all a choice, and here's this couple that are proving that it's a choice. And I was looking at the pictures of them in Newsweek magazine. I won't forget this. It's like I remember where I was in my house looking at this publication that came out, and I looked at the pictures of them going, they look completely uncomfortable, unnatural, staged. This does not look like a comfortable couple sitting together looking like a real married couple. And it was, you know, years later, and, you know, John is a mutual Facebook friend of both of ours, and I look at what he his demeanor, his cooking, his everything, you know, he looks so authentic. He is just authentic, you know, and it's a, you know, the difference is just astronomical. And that's all we can do. I mean,
yep.
any one of us, you know, there are great actors in this world, but having to act 24 hours a day, 7 days a week
it's exhausting.
Is exhausting. Yeah.
You know, Rob, what's not exhausting is fresh coffee from Rainbow Brew. We're going to break for just a quick second and come right back, and we're going to talk about your article next.
When it comes to coffee, okay, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
So, I'll tell you what. I never thought in a million years that people could actually grow coffee beans in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but the folks at Rainbow Brew do, and apparently it has such an amazing taste. If you've tried it once, you're a fan for life, and they ground the beans fresh or they send out the whole beans to you, and then they ship it worldwide. So if you're looking for a new or different coffee experience, go to rainbowbrew.com and check them out. They are awesome people, and I love working with David at the company there. So go have a cup of coffee and tell him I sent you. So Rob, let's I think talking about the Duggars first is interesting because we get to an article that I read today that you wrote that I'm sure is going viral as we speak, but it's your new article and your series, and you're really known as The Gay Dad Sounds Off and it writes an open letter, blah, blah, blah. Pick your, you know, favorite, whatever is going on for the week. And I don't mean blah, blah, blah disrespectfully. I just mean because there's so many that you can pick from. It's just like throw a dart, and there's a great, great topic for you because there's so many people out there we can shake our heads at. This week, you have your pawn for the homophobic dollars, and I read the article tonight before the show, and so much of this is so enlightening. I don't know, you know, and unless you're like an author, and I mean, you're an author, you know what I mean, Rob, but you know, like you're reading
from your
book and you're reading, I'm going to read you page 32 of the book. I usually don't ask people to read on the show because it's just, you know, that's what it is. But your letter really hits home on so many key points. I don't even know where to start other than to say, please tell us about it and why you chose Miss Davis in Kentucky to be your recipient this week.
Well, a lot of big questions there. One of the things, going back to who I am as a writer, is that I found my voice, and this is one thing you tell prospective writers, is find out who you are, find your voice, you know, and that's what you need to write to. It's not just a matter of putting together a few good sentences. And my voice as a writer, I tapped into the deeper part of my soul, which is being a dad has meant the most to me in my life over virtually anything else. And standing up for being gay, which has also meant a lot to me because for 20 plus years, you know, I've been fighting the injustices around that as the tides have moved. And so the combination of the two is that I feel like I've been through enough. I've survived virtually everything. And I feel strong. And I want to stand up and speak out for the people who don't feel strong and don't feel like they can address this stuff. So when a lot of these people take to the forum, the public forum, Kim Davis, the clerk in Kentucky, is the one that I talked to this week. And last week it was the couple who did the billboards in Iowa. The reason I'm addressing them is because they're hurting people. They're hurting families that are not writers, who are not out there publicly saying, hey, that hurts, knock it off. So I'm saying it for them. I'm saying it for other families that they go online and they feel demeaned and criticized and repressed and harmed by the public statements, pronouncements of these people. Kim Davis in particular is a little bit odd in that she is taking this stance that has no legitimate end game for her.
At all.
You know, it's it's not like there's a reasonable outcome in her favor. People are not, there's too much of a slippery slope behind her. We've got one situation, somewhere else in the world where people want to say who they get to bake cakes for. And there are quite a few people who stand up and say, hey, if I'm baking cakes, I do want to choose who I bake cakes for. Even if I'm wrong about it, I still want that choice. So not the discussion today, but here we have a public servant who wants to pick and choose based on her own life choices, what she authorizes, does not authorize in her job. And there is very little way to get your head around that as that being okay. Because and one of the points I make in the letter is this woman, Kim Davis, has been married 4 times. And there are people out there, other conservative Christians, who don't approve of that. So I don't think she would have, on her last journey to the altar, been very cool with going into her own office and having people say, sorry, you're still actually married to your first husband and we're not doing this. But she certainly had the expectation that she would get served and did and should have. So the impetus behind this was to call her out on that. The other piece of this, however, is kind of the really ugly underbelly, not that her outer belly isn't, her outer cause is not ugly in itself, but she's being backed up by a group called the Liberty Council. And the Liberty Council is the one that is really perpetuating this. Because if Kim Davis was standing on her own, she would say, I don't want to do this. The governor said, you have to do this to do your job. She'd say, I don't want to do this. And they'd say, there's the door. Thank you very much. You're gone. That's what would happen. But she's backed by a Liberty Council that is running this through the court system, making out like they're going to have some success about it, when all legal experts are looking at it going, this is dead. People are trying to look at it going, okay, somewhere you must have a point. And there is no point. And the real point is they make money off her. She is a pawn. They're making money off her by pursuing this case. They get to go out to all their donors and say, isn't it awful? Aren't those awful gay people doing horrible things to our poor conservative government officials who don't want to authorize their marriages? Give us money. Give us money so we can go fight this. And that's what's happening.
And I think there's so many disappointing things here. Number one, it's like, if you don't have to like the law, but you need to uphold the law. And if the federal judge has told you you need to do this, and the state judge has told you you have to do this, having you say, I just don't feel like it because it's against my religious beliefs, then that is not the job for you. You need to go find a different job that will align yourself with your religious belief. I don't really care what that is. Okay, and by the way, I don't care if the issue is gay marriage or anything else. Paying traffic tickets, maybe that's against your religious beliefs. But in this case, we're talking about people refusing to issue marriage license for LGBT people. Okay, so I think number one, there's that issue. But then, number two, and I didn't know she'd been married 4 times. So that, and if I skimmed over that or glanced over that, Rob, I apologize because that would have been something I would have been. She's been married 4 times.
But to be fair, I think I alluded to it. I didn't harp on it because, I didn't want to turn around on that. It wasn't the point.
But, right.
Yeah.
And so I think the thing that gets me about, her role is that even if somebody came and said, the only reason they're telling you to put up the good fight is so they can put more money in their pocket, I honestly don't know if she would have the ability to recognize whether or not, for her, if that was true or not. But when you read your article on evolveequals.com and you read A Gay Dad Sounds Off on the Pond for the Homophobia Industry Refusing to Do Her Job, I'll actually post this on my Facebook page, so you can go read it. But after reading that, I feel sorry for her that she does not recognize the fact that she is being used and used and used. And like you said, at the end of the day, that organization is going to line their pockets with all this donor money, and she's going to be left hung out to dry, and she's going to be made to look like the bigot she currently is. Versus, and you gave a scenario about, you know, what it might look like if she, you know, did something different. Can you go through that?
Yeah, it's, you know, there is a point there where, and many people are doing this now. I'm really surprised at how many people who, well, I'm not surprised, because it is actually what I expected. The same thing with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when Don't Ask, Don't Tell fell. Because the ain't it awfuls, the what horrible things would happen, we all knew, those of us who are gay, knew that those things would not happen. Because we've already experienced the opposite. When we came out to family members and people who were, you know, theoretically anti-gay before they realized that we in their lives were gay, so many of them were, that shocked them out of these opinions. Because when they knew who we were and that we were that, then they questioned the fallacies. And so there's a very good chance that somewhere in her, you know, if she has any compassion, she would get to know these people that she is fighting against, because in principle, they're doing wonderful things. They want to commit to each other. They want to say, I want to be responsible for this other person for the rest of my life. I want to build a family with this person. I want to, you know, care for them. I'm committing to them. You know, it's like, it has nothing to do with, I want to have sex with them. You know, not that that's a bad thing. I mean, I hope they do. You know, but all I'm saying is that that isn't what they're doing when they're coming to her. You know, she's not, you know, renting them their bordello room. She is,
what?
You know,
the marriage license doesn't come with a bordello room?
It does not.
I want my
they don't
money
tell you that part. Yeah, no honeymoon suite with the old seal of approval. You got to do that on your own. But, you know, it's like, so I just, you know, and plus the, you know, we've seen the reality of families, and, you know, so many gay dads, particularly gay dad families, are the family, the only family structure who first go to foster care and foster care adoption as their first avenue of building a family. All other family structures consider something else before they go to there. So, you know, a lot of these gay families are going out, helping kids in need who might be dead, might be more severely harmed, abused, giving them wonderful lives, you know. And so I could definitely see her walking down the street after reversing herself and, you know, issuing marriage license anyway to people she really doesn't want to, and seeing some kid, you know, in the hands of a dad, and suddenly realizing that's one of my marriage licenses. That family is somebody I actually did my part in allowing them to build, and I'm seeing a happy child. And so I really see that as one potential ending should she reconsider her stance.
Well, you know, and one of the, yes, so first and foremost that. One of the things that I think that you have talked about in the past, but I love it when you re-talk about it, are the fact that, you know, you do hear from so many people around the country and around the world when they read your article, they either were that themselves, know of somebody that's been like that themselves, and have shared your information with them, and to hear some of the, I don't want to call them success stories, but let's call them that, success stories about changes in attitudes and perceptions in a variety of different topics, because you've written on, I don't know, you know, two dozen different, you know, here's a letter to, and, you know, in this case, it's the homophobic dollars that we're talking about. But, you know, you've had the billboard people, you've had, you know, everything going on, and you change lives, or you help change perspectives with a lot of people that you probably never thought in a million years you would have touched.
I hope so. The one that was the most dramatic wasn't really even changing minds. It was creating awareness within people who have good hearts but didn't quite know what to do with it. And that was an article I wrote about a young man who was thrown out of his home or left because he felt like he had no other choice. But he was essentially homeless for being gay. He was 15. And a family took him in and adopted him as part of their family. He is now in college. Amazing healing story of what happened with his family. And I wrote that story. It actually has gone viral twice, which is a little bit odd. It had a resurgence and went viral again. But when that story hit, I got all these requests from people saying, you know, hey, if there's another kid like Corey, I want to give him a home. I want to give him a home. So I contacted an organization I work with called Raise a Child US, and we put their information on the article as I was getting these requests and it was going viral. And the bottom line is that through those two instances, they have formed 65 new homes of people who filled out applications to adopt LGBT kids needing homes.
Wow. There's
65 homes that were created by that article helping connect the dots. So, yeah, that's huge.
So what are you working on next? Because your life never stops. I mean, you were like that rolling stone, never gathering any moss. We're never going to call you Mossy Rob.
A week from Saturday on my radio show out in Santa Cruz, I have this fabulous guest. I cannot wait. We've been talking about doing this show forever. He's a recording artist. He did this great album called Blonde Jesus, and I'm probably his biggest, you know, stalker and groupie, but don't tell
him.
That
sounds like a great show,
but
Rob.
I can't wait. And I love the album. I love all the songs on it. And we're going to kind of pick it apart and go through the different songs. Also, okay, we'll tell everybody it's you.
Oh, wow.
Thrice. But we're also going to go through your EP, Eyes Wide, that have three great songs on it itself. And just talk about some of the, you know, how these songs came to be. Some of it, dig down to the deeper meaning behind them. You know, it's part of this world that we're in right now, or maybe just my unique experience in it. But normally you hear an album and you go, wow, what were they thinking when they did that? Isn't that great? And I get to actually sit down with you and find out. So I'm extremely excited about that. And quite frankly, I think I am going to write about Josh Duggar, so the conversation we had may make itself to an article if I carry through on that one.
Well, whatever you end up working on, I know that it goes viral and crazy super, super quick. There was an article that you wrote last week that ended up being on the front page of Yahoo. And so, I mean, it's the front page. It wasn't even like you had to scroll down. It was there, one of the top one or two articles. And I sent Rob a screenshot, and I said, well, aren't you Mr. Fancy Pants? Because as soon as I saw the article title, I was like, that sounds like something Rob would write. And I don't know why I didn't automatically go, oh, this is a Rob article. But I think it just caught me off guard because it was on Yahoo, and I click on it, and of course it's Rob's article. And I'm like, Rob's on the front page of Yahoo. Rob, do you know you're on the front page of Yahoo? So, I mean, that's everybody who's listening tonight. That's the kind of guest that we have. Rob Watson is everywhere with his written word, and it's getting coverage worldwide on all of his, you know, great dear whoever letters, and you know, his perspective on why you know, he needs to communicate with them. So I applaud you for doing that, because I think you do give a voice to a lot of people who either don't know the right words, don't know how to go about putting those words together, or where to send those words once they're done, so they have a visibility outside of just, you know, writing a mean and nasty letter. And I think one of the things that I like about your writing, though, Rob, is that when you do write, you are so fact-driven. It's really not really an emotional. This is my take. You might think of it differently, which is okay because it's your words. But it's really taking the emotion, which is usually the heat of the issue, out of it, and you write very factual, so you can communicate on a rational level with most people, I would hope, who would choose to read your article and have them say, wow, I learned something new, or I can appreciate why Rob thinks this way, and we might not always agree, but at least it's, you know, it's put together versus, you know, some meme that you're going to find on Facebook that says, you know, so-and-so did this, so, you know, they really suck. You know, share this 9 million times and they'll go to hell. You know, you don't write that way. You don't. You write in a logical, concise, you know, educated manner that when you read it, you're like, that really totally, I get it. That makes sense. And I have to applaud you for that, because it's really hard, I think, today to find writers really on anything that aren't writing for the meme soundbite of the moment. Because I think that does a huge disservice to the reader, but it also does a huge disservice to that writer, because I think that gives them a false sense of journalism or credibility when there really is none. And you certainly are the antithesis of that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and that is important to me, because to me, ideally, the thing that I really would like to see happen as a result of these articles is the person I'm writing to, I would love to hear a letter back to them going, you know, you made a good point. You got me. I'm reconsidering. Because to me, and that was part of my point with the Kim Davis thing, is, you know, if she came out tomorrow and said, wow, I really screwed this up, and I'm sorry, and let's do this thing, here's your marriage license, you know, I'm really embarrassed, you know, or I'm not even embarrassed, I'm just sorry, you know, and I wish you well, so much forgiveness would come her way. You know, and there are people who would, you know, still want to hate her and all that, but there are a lot of people that would go, thank you for taking another look. Because we as a community would not be where we are, you know, if people didn't change their minds. Because
right.
10 years ago, so many of the people who have since changed their minds were in a totally different mindset. And I'm very aware of that. So for the younger LGBT kids coming up, many of which who will, you know, you and I will be sitting there, you know, looking for our dentures and telling them stories, and they'll go, what? They thought, what?
I know, it's going to be crazy
kidding.
In even just 5 years.
Yeah, it'll be we had to walk in the, you know, 10 miles to school in the snow barefoot stories about what gay people really had to endure. Now, there are going to be gay people coming up that won't get it. And, you know, that's our legacy that we're giving them, is, you know, freedom from having to get it, that they had to endure that prejudice.
Crazy, crazy, crazy things. We've got about 2 minutes left here, Rob, and then we're going to play the surprise hit of the summer, Gay Wedding by yours truly, to
Yay.
Round out the show tonight. Yay! So what words of wisdom do you want to leave the listeners with tonight?
Wow, words of wisdom. I just think, you know, let's... I would quote your other song, you know, Eyes Wide. That's the one that I think has an enormous amount of wisdom, which is just, you know, keep your eyes wide open and look at things from all sorts of different perspectives. And when the haters come, look at, you know, where they're human, and let's try to go for that. And at the same time, let's look out for the people who are more vulnerable than we are, that need us to stand up for them and protect them, because bullying kills.
It's horrible, and I'm glad that you're out there as – I'm going to start calling you Bat Rob or Robber Man or Aqua Rob or something like that. We're going to come up with like a superhero name for you, and that's going to be –
Yeah, just not Rob a Bank.
Rob a Bank. That could be like a drag name or something like that. Rob a Bank. I love that. Now you're giving me ideas. And now I'm going to tell you a little secret here. I'm working on trying to come up with a character name for a future episode in my sitcom that I'm working on. And my writing partner and I came up with several this week, and for a variety of reasons, they didn't work. They've been used on other shows or whatever the case was. And so I've been thinking about a name. Rob a Bank is very cute, but I can't use that, but it certainly puts the creative hat back on. So,
yeah, because as soon as another character goes, oh, Rob, you're dead.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. So with that, everybody, I'm going to say adieu. Bid Mr. Rob Watson adieu. If you want to go listen to KSCO 1080 AM this Saturday night at 7 o'clock, you can check out their Facebook page on the Blog Talk Rated G radio page. There's a link for it right there. If you're listening from Westar Radio Network in the UK, it's Rob, what's the website again?
www.outinsantacruz.com.
There we go. We do that. And for everybody else, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, California time, we have a very early Friday dance party for 2 weeks in a row. Why? Because our guest for the second week in a row is also from the UK. I've explained to everybody, when our guests are calling from overseas, I do the show earlier because they're awake. And so I'd rather have them be awake than try to have them call in at 2 or 3 in the morning for the Friday night dance party, normally at 7 p.m. So we're having Mr. Jordan Adams. We're going to be doing the United States premiere of his song called Hold On. I've actually been playing quite a bit here on the show on Rated G Radio for the last week or so. We're also going to be playing Be My Love. That was an original song that he had sent over to me prior to getting Hold On. And we've been chatting today, and I keep saying, Jordan, you got to send me more music. You got to send me more music. So if we hear more songs besides those two, you'll hear it tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning on the Friday dance party on Rated G Radio. Again, Rob, it's been a pleasure having you here. Here's my song, Gay Wedding. We'll see you live on Friday. Don't drive distracted.
Second to no one. Hey, Mr. Mister, our time has come. Hey, Mr. Mister, marry your true love. Hey, Mr. Mister, hot bun. So strong.
Come back. You've been listening to Rated G Radio.